jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 8 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, Marcus. It is a great week. Who won out of us on the weekend?
God, it's painful. Yeah. You actually beat me by a fair margin too, so it wasn't a scrappy 12-point affair, so congrats to you, Mark.
70-odd points, and the best thing was I think it was locked in on Sunday night, Saturday night, because on Sunday we had all the same players to play, so I just got to sit back and relax on Sunday, watch Maccabee laid out. How disappointing was that? Even though I beat you this week, you were right last week about McDonald. Somehow you knew that he was going to be the sub, score 12.
Yes! Abilities win out again!
But you didn't actually follow your own instincts this week, no, I don't think.
Dunstan.
You might not have traded him. Last week I brought in Parker and Watson. So two upgrades I'd expect to do a little bit better, even though Watson was pretty sucky against the Doggies. I jumped up to 3,059th. So really, after a really, really slow start to the year, I'm pretty happy with that going into the buys. Hopefully I can have a good buy period. I can't believe that I jumped up 3,000 spots with McDonald's 12 and Mitchell's 9 on my field. That was pretty surprising. But some rookies like Langdon and Polek, Tyson, those sort of guys, they did the job for me, which was nice. And the worst part of my weekend was in our very competitive draft league, I picked Mitchell with pick 4 this year, and he's out for 8 weeks, and now I can't get anything for him.
That's good.
It's like the worst week for it to happen because it's going into the buyers, so everyone's got donuts everywhere, so nobody really wants a bar of him. And I got his 9 on my field and lost my draft game by 1 point.
Fair to say you are not going to be a huge threat for the next 8 weeks with one of your top picks out in the back line.
Hopefully not one of my the top pick.
Yeah.
How did you go? Let's tell us you did worse than me. Yay.
Yeah, I'm pretty astounded, Mark. 23, what was it going to exactly?
23-28.
23-28. Congrats, mate. Off 20 players and a captain. That's an insane score. So kudos to you. It's an absolutely huge round. I was pretty happy with my 22-56 considering, like you said, McDonald, Mitchell. So all things considering, not too bad going down to 439th, still in the top 500. I was quite upset with myself because I was tossing up Dunstan or McDonald, and I thought, well, if Langdon doesn't play well, I'll keep McDonald. It may have swayed me a little bit, and should have just pulled the trigger because I think Dunstan was only a one-weeker, and he might be back this week.
Yeah, concussion, back this week, break-even of about 70, so that would have been quite useful.
But, got to move on quickly and still got quite a few trades to play with. So went ahead into this round with vigor. We are still sitting at the top of the league ladder with the Supercoach Coach Aces. So kudos.
Number one.
Well done, guys. Did well this week again. I think the average score was higher than mine. So league well and truly kicked my butt.
Pretty tight up the top, though. A few leagues in contention this year.
Mm-hmm. This week, we've taken the questions again from Facebook and Twitter, but instead of positionally, we're going to look at the outs first and then the ins. So, Mark, we'll start off with a question here from Pat Villanova, just a general one to kick us off. How many players are you going to have playing in the buys?
It's a really good question. I think I'm looking at around the 19 to 20 mark each week if I can manage it. I'd be pretty comfortable with that if I had 20 players on the field. It allows you to have sort of a couple of players have subs or those low 50 games. It would have been nice on the weekend to get rid of McDonald and Mitchell's scores. So yeah, I'm thinking 19 to 20. I was actually wondering this week whether I've got 19 as it is if selections go my way, whether I actually push it to go to 20 this week or whether that's a waste because it's going to cost me one of the players later on. But yeah, about that, Mark.
I'm finding this year the buys are a lot easier to tackle, Mark, because they're happening earlier in the season. So it just suits our upgrade schedule a little bit better, suits the rookie job security a little bit better because we're not having to deal with, you know, the downgrades from a Laidler who are having a lot worse job security. So yeah, 19-22 at the moment in round 9 and then 20 in round 10. So that's pretty healthy, but that's with 9 trades planned across the next 3 rounds. But I'm
So you're being specific because you think you can predict who's going to be selected. I am a lot less optimistic in my predictive powers than that. So I'm going to say about 20.
Yeah, well, that's if all my rookies are playing. So, yeah, I'm hoping on those players coming through, but that's a goal at least. Mark, how many trades are you planning to use over the next three rounds? And how many are you planning to have after the bye? Is that too much information to give out? James DeSellis has asked on Facebook.
No, I'm not high enough to worry about giving out that information. But, I'm not 100% sure at this stage. I know that you're an advocate of just flat out trading until all your trades are gone from here. And I'm not overstating that. But I am probably not going to max trade this week. Okay. I might do two. So, yeah, and then I'll just be max trading after that for probably 3 or 4 weeks and hopefully have eight or so trades to get me through the year.
My most aggressive strategy, I think, and it's something that I'm completely prepared to do, would be to max trade for the next six rounds. So I think that's 3-3-3 and 2-2-2, which would leave me with something like six trades for the last, I think, eight rounds or something like that. And that's something that I'm comfortable doing, because I've gotten away with that, I think, the past 2 years.
Because you're a lucky motherfucker.
Yeah, just charge your way up there and then you sort of just hover around for a little bit and it seems to work. And, I mean, the winner of Supercoach seems to do it each year too. So, look, I'm just going with it again because it seems to have worked and I'm a greedy guy. So, yep. That's
probably why I always beat you in the grand final. So, if you are going for league wins, you might just want to be a little bit more conservative than that. And if I think if you're going to be conservative, this might be the week to do it. Any trades that you do make, you're trading in players that are going to be missing one of the next 2 weeks. So, if I was going to not max trade, it would be this week, but definitely max trading the next 2 weeks.
Okay, next question here from Dean Phelps. I have Langdon, Aish, KK, and Crouch. All will still make decent cash. Do you recommend culling any to get premiums in as soon as possible? Or are we better to wait this week and start upgrading in round nine? So put this one
good
in
there. Problem to have.
Because this is a problem that a few people will be sort of grappling with. And I guess if you're newer to Supercoach, the strategy might not be as obvious to you. Mark, what do you think is the move for rookies that still have value left in them? Do you recommend culling them to upgrade, or are you best to hold off and ripen them?
I think it depends how much money they've still got to make, in a sense, and how low exactly their break even is. Out of those, I think Crouch doesn't have quite as low a break even. Like, it's still pretty low, but the others maybe have that little bit of extra money to make. I mean, there's no way you could trade Langdon this week. I know that he is worth a decent amount of money and he's got the buy this week, but you just couldn't do it. He's got such a low break even. If I had Cole Jasny at the moment, I said this about McDonald last week, so maybe I'm just a curse, I would be looking at not trading him in the near term. He's scoring really well. Like, I was tracking him and Swallow on the weekend and Cole Jasny was matching him. So I'd keep Cole Jasny this week and then work out over the next few weeks whether you even need to trade him. He looks like a ripper to have in that spot. I really wish I had him.
Okay, remember, Mark, interrupted preseason, yeah?
Yeah.
Missed round one?
Did.
Round two, 54. Round three, 67. 64, 82. 117, 88. That is a very nice upward trend to be heading on, Mark. And he's finding building his feet very, very well. So I actually agree with you on that one, Mark. I'd hold on to him. Yeah.
What I beat you this week, so now you think that what I'm talking about. I understand.
Follow the leader.
Aish break even of one, round 10 by. You'd want to get rid of him before the buys, but just earn that extra nice bit of cash because of his big 140 last week.
And he has turned out to be one of the best, if not the best rookie for the year. After
just timing with the massive score. Like, and Dunstan had two huge scores, but they were really early.
Next question here we've got from Adam Whitfield from Twitter, and it's about the outs again, Mark. Trying to manage Mitchell-Yanch combo now. Mitchell's an 8-weeker and Yanch a 3-weeker. So what would you recommend for people with Mitchell, I assume, and a definite trade? How about Yanch, and how about if you have both?
Just talking about the spelling of Yanch there, we did muck it up a bit earlier. One of my students tried to say his name yesterday, Janish. Yeah, it's not obvious. Mitchell and Yanch. I haven't been updated on the exact details of Yanch's injury and how long he'll be out for. I know it was reported ribs. He's coming off two low scores as well now. So if he was going to be a good player, you could probably pick him up again later. So I guess he's a pretty good candidate to be trading this week. And Mitchell has to go. So quite a few options. It depends which buy round you're looking at, because that's going to have a huge influence over which players you actually pick. I think that Bartel is the one that I want the most, but he's out this week, so that's really disappointing. I really like Hibbard, but I think that he's overpriced. I wouldn't really want to pay 530 for him.
Ouch. I did that.
Oh, really?
Not 510, but yeah, I did it.
Seems max price. I don't really see Hibbert being worth more than that. He's not a huge scorer. He's not going to go on any huge runs. He'll just be consistent, like an Enright of the past sort of player.
But he's, I reckon he's one of the few that you can say bona fide top six.
Yeah, he's competing with, you've got the McVeigh, Mitchell, Bartel to compete with. So he's on the next line below there, but very close to the top of that line for sure. And Simpson probably is as well. He's 5'10", so again, you're close to paying full price for a Simpson. Super consistent. Seems to get it done every week.
The main reason for picking a player like Hibbert ahead of someone like Simpson is that Hibbert is a lot more consistent. And the reason I was happy to bring him in early is that, barring something seriously bad, he's not really going to drop in price. So you're not losing a cheap option in the future by picking him up now, whereas Simpson may be prone to the poor game. I reckon Hibbert is a little bit more consistent. So
But I think it's, well, really, if I had those two guys, I'd almost make my decision purely on buys, though.
Yeah.
Just at this time of year, I think that you have to, and you can upgrade to the other one later if that's something that comes up.
So, I mean, it's a good time to just talk about our approach, I guess, to this, because I guess my thought process is I'm looking for the top six. Hibbert is the least likely to drop in price. So if none of them are cheap, I go for Hibbert first. Whereas your attitude to trading them in is a little bit different. You want to maybe talk about that?
Sure. So I figure that, like you said, that there's he's going to be top six. Well, I think that below the top three with the Mitchell, McVeigh and Bartel, I think that there's probably six of them that could easily fill those three spots. So I would just pick whoever presents the most value at the time, or whoever works with my buy structure the best. So if they're all going to average about 95 to 100, I might even gain some more by getting someone cheaper or getting someone that's not going to cost me throughout the buy period. So an example might be that I might want to save, if I think that Burgoyne has a good chance to average the same as Hibbert, that I would probably take Burgoyne this week because he's round nine, which helps me, and he's $40,000 cheaper. So any points that Hibbert might beat Burgoyne by is made up from those two factors.
I definitely like trading, adhering to the buy structure. In terms of value, I think I do stray from the top six when opportunities present themselves with injury-affected, really, really low-scoring games. Like we saw Pritis last year with a 9 or something, and Mitchell this year again, 9. Players like those, when they really plummet in price and present huge value, I'm a fan of. But
apart from, if it's only 40K, you're not going to
Yeah. That's a difference in strategy, and I think both are valid to attack the season. So choose your poison. I think it changes your upgrade strategy quite a bit.
One player that I wanted to ask you about while we're talking about defenders is Enright. He's sitting at 430 with 109 break even. He's always been like a Hibbert in the past, reliable to average 95-ish, and just even if he's looking for a poor game, he normally gets a bunch of possessions at the end of the game and gets his score up. He's had, I know he got injured a little bit earlier in the year, so had a 67, had a 49 against Port, which brought his price down at 430. Seems like he could present a ton of value. Is that being crazy thinking of him next week?
No, I don't think it's crazy, and I think that would probably fit in with your strategy a little bit better. He's at the price point where I think he's probably close to enough value to snap up at 440. And like you said, that's just because he's a sure thing for the top nine. And in the back line, I think there are quite a lot of well-priced options at the moment. There are not a lot of good value options. And so I think he's, you know, probably the best of the lot at that sort of price. I think I prefer him to Birchall at 450. Prefer him to Hearn at 438. Thoughts on those guys?
Murphy has the upside to go on a huge run. I just can't see myself picking him for some reason. It just doesn't feel right. Murphy definitely could average closer to the 100 mark for 450. He seems like a pretty solid pick. It's just an interesting thing to think about because you've got Enright at 438 now. Hearn's 438, but he's got a break even of 156, so he's going to be really cheap. And Hanley is 475 and has a break even of 181. So you're going to end up with Enright, Hearn, and Hanley, who all could be pretty close to that top 10 defenders. Not, maybe not the top six, but pretty close to the top 10. And they're all going to be low 400s. So it's just an interesting thing to think about, whether, like, if you can save an upgrade and almost $100,000 by getting one of those guys, I don't know whether it might be worth it. I don't think you could take all three, but if the timing's right, then I'm sort of keen to look into it.
All right. How would you list those guys? And is there anybody else at that sort of price point that you'd be looking at?
At the moment, just with those three, I just put a blanket over them. I probably like Hanley the best, but he's still 475, due back this week, and has had hamstring and back problems this year. And I think Murphy at 450 presents a ton of value. And I probably won't pick him myself, but I can see why people would.
I would probably go with Murphy 1, Enright 2, and then Hearn, and then Birchall last, probably.
Really anti-Birchall. Surely Birchall's not that bad.
No, and the thing is, really, really like Birchall's game. Think he's a really good player. He seems to be getting better when I watch him play, but doesn't translate into Supercoach points. And to me, that's just, there's so many options for the outside run from the Hawthorn backline that is just not consistent enough. And when he is for a serious patch, they put a tag on him. So I just don't think he's going to get there, because he plays really good footy. And if he was going to score like a 100 plus premium, he would have already. And I don't know. Maybe that's...
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, maybe he'll prove us wrong, though. We'll see. I just want to talk about the top six backs. If you're going toward my strategy, who would your top six be? Because we have had questions about that.
I'm going to put Bartel, Mitchell, and McVeigh in there, and disregard Mitchell's 9. That was just unlucky. I think I'd have Hibbard clearly in there. And then, honestly, I think that there's a whole bunch of people that could get in there. You could have one of those cheaper options in there. I think Hanley's a good chance. I think Burgoyne's a really good chance. Andrew Walker's a good chance. So is Cade Simpson. And I really like Michael Johnson. He plays free every single week. Has a really, really good role. So, and because of my position, I don't need to be more specific than that.
I think I would go with McVeigh, Bartel, Mitchell, obviously. Hibbert, like I said, I think is a shoo-in. Swallow, I think, is probably a really, really good bet. Oh, yeah. He might even be leading the back line at the moment, and that's just, he's playing in a team that's surprisingly, 5-2 now? That's just crazy.
Swallow's almost up in that top echelon.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. So he'd be there, and then there's really only one more spot left. It's pretty hard to pick. Walker looks like he's been scoring all right recently. Like,
2 weeks.
89, 74, 101, 94, 109 the last few weeks. If Carlton pick up the game, he could be good. I do like Johnson, Mark. I have picked him in the past. My only problem was that he dropped off after I picked him up. And when I was watching his game closely, I was just, because he's not the player to win them the game. The game sort of has to fall his way for him to score, and therefore sometimes his scoring may drop off, and over the course of 22 rounds, that sort of is reflected in your average a little bit. So I think he'll average 95-ish, but I'm not sure he'll be a top six. I'd probably have Walker there, Mark. What do you reckon about Shaw, though? I'd be interested to hear your thoughts there.
Seems to be scoring really well at the Giants. I mean, you picked him last year. I said last year, no way I could pick him, and it burnt me not picking him, but no way would I ever pay more than $500,000 for Shaw, even if he looks really good. Just because he's, like, going to hit someone or something stupid's going to happen.
Scott Thompson is someone that I just want to mention, because he hasn't had the best start to the season. I think he missed the game. Was it suspension or injury or something? He's missed the game. His break even is 148 right now, but he was All-Australian last year. He was in ripping form. So he has played some good football this year, just not consistent enough to score well. He has the potential to easily average 95, Mark. I think he did that for the season last year. So he could be a good get after the bye. He's a round 8 player. On to the next question here from Scott McNaughton from Facebook. Is Sean Makers a good option in the back line? Interesting question. Okay. Scored 104, swingman.
Right? Didn't it like a 140-point win? Like, he looked awesome. He looked really, really good playing up forward.
Yeah.
And the Hawks forwards are killing it. It was a 140-point win, so I wouldn't be reading too much into that week.
He's 270K.
So it's quite expensive.
Doesn't change things for you. I thought that'd be like, oh, look, that's a bit cheap.
No, I actually thought it'd be cheaper than that.
Okay, all right. That's fair. All right, moving on. Carl Volochsky has got a question for us. Speculation of seasons and top 8 premium forwards. So to balance this question, why don't you chuck in the value forwards that you like, and I'll give my top 8, Mark.
Or my top 6. You can give your top 8 first, man. Top 6 first.
Okay. I'd have to go with Dangerfield, obviously. I think Parker's definitely in there. I think Martin will sort of get there by the end of the year. At least I hope so. Had Ruffett in there at the start of the season, but would think that he'd be missing out now. I think Gray, Mark, I'm going to chuck him in there. And that's if he stays injury free, but I'm taking the punt that he will. And if he does, he'll be in there.
Super form.
Yeah. And Dane Zorko, I know he had that disappointing 46 and he had that 59. But the thing is, he's playing for the Brisbane team. He's averaging 97, which isn't that terrible for seven games of Brisbane just being black. So I think he's a sneaky chance because he's actually impressed me and did bring him in for a reason. He was showing really good form. So I think, is that six?
No Delhouse, no Gunston, no Nick Riewoldt, no Brent Harvey.
Yeah, I think Riewoldt, Harvey a little bit old.
Riewoldt's got a break even of 294,000. He's going to be super cheap in a couple of weeks if he can hold that knee together. I think Luke Bruce could push up there. He's had a really good start to the year in Hawthorn, keep winning. He's going to look really good.
Wingard, Mark. Possibility?
I'm not sure about Wingard, mate. Now, I really thought he'd do a lot better against the Giants, but he really struggled to get anywhere near the ball in that first half. Things just didn't go his way. He's kicking a few goals, so I mean, he's super cheap now, right by, and if he came back and averaged 95 from here, he'd be pretty happy.
Rioli?
I've got him. I don't want to jinx him. I don't know what's going to happen. He's a huge risk, and I don't know what's going to happen there. I'm just hoping for the best, closing my eyes.
To be honest, Mark, going through these forward options, I think despite my strategy, I'm almost certainly going to toss out this top six, whatever, out of the window for the forward line because it's way too hard to predict, I think. There's so many emerging candidates, these heaps of former champs that we just don't know if they're going to hold on for the whole year. There's so many injury-prone players. So I think it might be a bit better to go for your strategy, Mark, which is to search for the value. So where do you see the value?
I'm just going to go with my six as being the best six scorers.
That's a good idea.
Regards the value, Ruffhead, I don't want to bring any more forward key position players into my team. And he should have scored 160 on the weekend. He was 115 at three-quarter time and just didn't really get on with it. I think Charlie Dixon is a really interesting candidate right now. Dan Gorringe is probably at least a month away. Zach Smith hasn't even played a knee full game coming back for the knee, but that's supposed to happen in the next couple of weeks. Tom Nichols did a posterior. So you would expect over the next 5 weeks or so at least that Dixon's going to be playing that ruck key position forward role, and that's where he scored all his points last year. If he could stay fit, which he's probably struggled with, then I think that he has a decent amount of upside and could average 105 at least over that period where he is playing that covering role.
I am really big on just trading super aggressively, and I think a huge, 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 huge part of trading super aggressively is to leave yourself with an option for ruck cover, because if you're trading super aggressively, you don't really want to be stuffing around trading a ruck premium out for a 1 week injury. And similarly, if you're at the top, you can't afford to lose 100 points on the leader. So Charlie Dixon, just my eyes are lighting up and I'll be very tempted after he's off the bye next week. And despite the fact that he dropped in price, he started with a 22 because it was the first game and it's already out of his price cycle. And because he's already dropped 47K, Mark, his break even's only 102. So he's already ripe, essentially.
I don't think I have a lot of forward upgrades to come.
I'm just going to try and squeeze him in there somehow. Just jam it in there. Higgins to Dixon works, Mark.
Just keep Higgins in your team for a while, mate.
All right. Next question here. Bales_81. Robbie Gray or Robbie Gray, Mark?
Yeah, Robbie Gray. I think we discussed this last week, didn't we? Just that he...
He did it again.
Couldn't pick him again, but just keeps getting it done. And this is why we were so hot on him a few years ago, because he showed this sort of potential. And it's honestly, as a football watcher, it's great to see him realizing it.
Eventually, though, they turn it around. And don't you want to be on that train when he's turning it around?
I did the first few times.
I see. Okay. I think, I mean, his body has looked a little bit better the last few years. So it has stood up a little bit better than it was probably, let's say, 5 years ago, where, you know, it was just completely shot. He had sore tissues that were just broken up all over the place, but now he's strengthened his body. He looks really good and fit and strong. And of course, you say that until they do a hammy. So
I really hope for Robbie Gray's sake that he can power through and average 105, 110, help Port along, because he's like a key midfielder now. And yeah, brilliant player. But he's played 18 games last year, two the year before that, 11 in 2010. I'm sorry, that's just sometimes player just burns you too many times.
Yeah. All right, next question here, Mark. Ravi Chawa has asked on Facebook, is it worth paying 500k plus for guys in ripper form like Dalhouse, or would it be better to save 70 to 80k and stick with fallen premiums such as Ruffy or Wingard? So the trend of the show has sort of been toward this sort of topic. What do you reckon in the forward line, Mark?
That's a tricky question. I took Parker last week and he seemed pretty close to fully priced at about 500,000. I think that's just because I saw him as being pretty consistent and not necessarily likely to get a bunch cheaper. Dalhouse may be different to that. He seems like the sort of guy that could go on a huge run, but then post a 40 or so here and there. Oh, it's a tricky question, though. I'm not 100% sure of my answer, because like, if Wingard is 10, 15 points below Dalhouse, then you take Dalhouse, if that's how you predict it happening. But if you predict that they're going to be within 5 points of each other, then you obviously take Wingard or Ruffy. I also think that we've been talking off air about ways that we're going to get money in the next couple of weeks. We're really, really struggling, and we're going to have to be pretty inventive because the downgrade options just aren't there, especially in the forward and back line. From that perspective, unless you have some sort of creative strategy or all your rookies are fully priced or doing really well, then you might have to make some sacrifices and go for some value.
Good advice, Mark, to look at your individual team and how much value you can squeeze out of it. If it's becoming apparent, we're all doing upgrade plans for the next 3 weeks to minimize the donuts. If it becomes apparent during that buy planning that you're not going to have enough money to fully upgrade your team, like you're going to be stuck with 160k rookies not getting games on your bench as your cash-in options, then absolutely go after the Wingard and definitely pass on the Gray, because you're better off taking a position, an aggressive position, one that says, you know, I'm punting on Wingard going from a 450k player to a 500k player, and Gray may be getting injured and my value paying off for me in the long run. So yeah, sometimes going for the cheaper option is the more aggressive option, even though you're not aiming for the max points. Should we wrap up the show, Mark, or would you like to talk about any rookies on your mind?
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of rookies on my mind, and I don't see where they are, though. Which rookies do we like? I didn't mind the look of Akers. Jack Lloyd looked all right, but that was his third. Yep. With Mitchell going down, Hallahan might get a few more games. I didn't mind his game. Billy Hartung looked great as coming on as a sub. He had provided some real dash and run and added something to the Hawthorn team that I wasn't sure was actually there before. So, yeah, I didn't mind his game at all either, but maybe Patrick Cripps is the guy after smashing the VFL on the weekend, but I wouldn't be relying on Milk Malthouse. Yeah, really, really struggling to find these rookies, and that's why I'm a bit worried about the cash injection, mate. Anything that you like?
I think everyone will be trading in Jono O'Rourke as long as he's named this week.
Everyone will be. I didn't even name him.
Yeah.
I didn't even list him in the ones I discussed, and everyone's going to be trading him in.
Aren't they, Mark?
Well, he was subbed out because he looked shit.
Oh, okay. I thought he was the option.
He is, because he's played two games and he's a number two draft pick, but he hasn't exactly set the world on fire in the games that he's played.
Long-term suitability. He still probably has best chances of getting games late, of breaking into the team late, rather than a Hartung type that might struggle to break into the Hawthorn team as it consolidates for finals.
Yeah, there's probably a fair bit of truth in that. I think I'd be very closely tempted by Lloyd or Hallahan over O'Rourke.
So we did get a question about Jake Lloyd, Mark. So he's a 20-year-old, only in 1,400 teams, basically. Nobody knows about him, and we didn't even talk about him last week because he had a 15 and a 49 in place for Sydney, and he's come off the rookie list, and who is this kid? But he scored 97, Mark, on the weekend, and even though you would think that he doesn't have very good long-term prospects, considering we are really, 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 really struggling for downgrade options.
I wouldn't want him to be. You're paying a premium, though, and you've got Mitchell, Jeddah, Rock. You've got players to come back into this side, so sell him to me.
Okay, the only reason for Jake Lloyd is, if you look at the rookies, he's, I think, one of the rare players, or maybe the only player, rookie with a round 10 bye, so it's 2 weeks to mature, and has scored really well in the last round. He scored 97. So we'll realize two really good price increases over the next two rounds. So Jake Lloyd, if he continues his average of 54, which isn't much, will go up 80K in 2 weeks.
So our rookie proposition is so bad that you're thinking of bringing a rookie in for 2 weeks.
For 80K, yes.
That's how dire the situation is.
Yeah, it's either that or you've got to play around with your premiums to try and, if you've got a guy who's, maybe just played a poor game and is on the drop, you might swap him up out for a guy on the rise and then swap them back and try and make some value that way. We're really looking for such crazy and out there ways to make cash because it's a real struggle to find the value this year.
I guess that's why we've been so strong the last couple of weeks about taking these downgrades when they are there.
Yeah,
and Robertson and Lloyd both looked really good on the weekend. Cutler probably didn't get involved too much, but should be getting given more games. Look, Jono O'Rourke has got the pedigree, so I can totally understand why you think that everyone's going to be getting him. Yeah. I think I probably like Blake Akers a little bit better than the Saints, but he's only played one.
I think Cripps, he's played 274-21. He was injured the game that he was omitted for. And then last week played in the VFL, which, I mean, is an expected course of action for such a young kid to get back into a Mick Malthouse team. So, especially a winning team, I think they won the week before. So, they lost to Collingwood. Mick Malthouse said that it's inevitable they have to rebuild after that game. And Cripps, I think 22 disposals and 3 goals in a loss. So I hope he's coming back into consideration. He's in both our teams, so he bloody well better come back, Mark.
If you have a crazy strategy that you think you can solve all our cash generation problems, send us a message on Twitter and we will test it out. Yeah. Or Marcus will.
Yeah, anything really. I'm seriously considering Jake Lloyd, and that's not a good situation to be in. So with that, Mark, I think we should wrap up this week's show. Hopefully I want too much strategy talk to throw people off and they could cut through the mess.
Big show, man.
Certainly was. So we've got the buys coming up. All the best this round with half your or third of your team not playing.
All right, I beat you in round 7, mate. I'm hoping to do it in round 8 and start a new trend. I might not be back next week if I don't.
Well, hopefully this marks a good upward movement for the Supercoach Coach community. Generally is the case during the bye period. So I expect we'll all be back and smiling. Hope for good things. All the best. Catch you guys next round.
There you are.